that when one practices for both his own benefit and that of others, and these four possibilities, but that you always have to think of the others. And he is afraid that this aspect sometimes may get lost. And he always likes to stress this, and he wonders whether one can learn from Mahayana in this.
Learn what?
To be more social. No, he's very serious.
Attachment, detachment.
No, he's very serious about
to become attached more and more.
To help others.
To kusala, it can be.
It's kusala.
Okay. There can be attachment to kusala. But attachment is attachment.
He will stress more to be social, in the right way, I mean.
What about attachment? That teaches
for
Buddha.
That can always come with kusala, with any kind of kusala, of course. That whatever good we do, we have attachment, that is true.
And what about developing detachment?
Yeah. He says one should practice for one's own benefit and for the other's benefit. He likes to stress that very much.
Even no one knows. Or should someone know?
Yes. It can be for the other's benefit, even if there's no one else around.
It is, yeah, of course. When you have less defilements, it's for the other's benefit as well.
Yeah, one thinks of the others.
But he asks, can we learn from Mahayana in this respect? But then one has to know more about Mahayana, which I don't.
Well, I would think, Nina, that you do a lot of writing in Dhamma and you participate a lot in helping people with Dhamma. And I can't think of anything that's better to give than Dhamma, but I don't think you're an overly sociable person.
Not sociable, in that
right.
sense.
So I would take you as an example of someone who actually gives a huge amount to people. Even when you didn't know if your books were going to be readily read or anything, you still put a lot of work into that.
Yeah.
And it's shared around the world now because of the internet. But you're not social.
No, I'm
so
not.
I think
but I think there's a misunderstanding. People always wonder when we learn about Paramatta Dhammas and that there is no person, they will always misunderstand it and think that we are cold people and not feeling for other people. Do you have anything to add?
I think that Dhamma is Dhamma, not Mahayana or Hinayana.
No, I think so.
And when kusala citta arises more often, then less akusala. You don't have to call it by what means.
Yeah.
Dana or Sina or what?
That's right. It's helpful for everybody when there's more kusala citta.
I think quite a few people, like this friend and maybe Ludovic, I think also feel we should stress the social aspect more or the actions more.
Okay. Are we now in a social?
Yeah.
This moment. Right speech? Right thinking? Okay. No harsh word? Is it not wholesome? Not enough?
Yeah.
Not enough?
It's all right. It's good.
And we'll be like this no matter where and when.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking of wanting to be known or we are in social or things like that.
I think what's difficult to explain is how panya, development of panya, satipatthana, can lead to more kusala of all kinds, including considerateness to other people and less withdrawn and that sort of thing.
We have different accumulation no matter before or after studying the teachings and we know oneself. That's it. It doesn't mean that we have to change from being this person to be social like that.
But I think everyone in this room would probably say that their understanding of the Dhamma improvement, the development of that has made for more kusala of all kinds in their life, including what others would call social.
And so without panya, can one know the difference between metta and attachment? Even to animal like pet or friends or unknown person?
I mean, you lead your own life like I lead my own life. And it's so normal. It's so normal. Your concerns are basically my concerns. We have social life, each one, just living ordinary lives.
And what about being no body? See? Very nice to be nobody.
Even that was once criticized on the list. I remember.
But Nina, I think most of the world would criticize that concept.
I have one more question about kukucha, regret. Sotapanna has eradicated regret with regard to coarse defilements and the anagami with regard to subtle defilements, and Sotapanna has no more regret about, say, killing or of deeds because no chance of being reborn in woeful states. It seems strange that he would still have kukucha about subtle defilements performed in the past, but not of coarse ones. Like, for example, if one had been a little bit angry with one's wife, there might be regret about that, but not about having killed a tiger 10 years ago. Could you say a little more?
What about that kind of reality which is unpleasant, but it's not like tosa? For example, when one feels uneasy, like uneasy about one's own hair or dress or button or a fingernail or things like that. Sotapanna's kukucha.
Oh, the kind of kukucha. So
just a little bit about things.
Very slight. But why would there be, for example, that kind of uneasiness, very slight uneasiness about the dress or the small things, but not about something major?
It's all eradicated by Sotapattimagga.
For example, there's a little bit of uneasiness about the way one's hair looked yesterday in the photo, but
conditioned by conceit.
Yes, but what about just a little bit of uneasiness about having killed the tiger 5 years ago? No.
What's the use?
Well, you could say, what's the use of having that little bit of uneasiness about the hair?
But one knows that it doesn't give any result, the previous killing a tiger.
So just knowing that it doesn't give any result, how does that in itself mean, oh, suddenly no uneasiness about it?
One hasn't become as anagami yet. And Sotapanna knows what is left after Sotapattimagga citta, and that Sotapanna develops more understanding of any types of realities.
In the suttas, we read about a certain kind of wrong view that is not believing in the results of good and bad deeds. Mm-hmm. If a person has that view, then does it mean that they wouldn't have this kind of regret? I'm just trying to understand.
I think that as long as that person hasn't become enlightened yet, there must be all kinds of akusala.
Mm. And it would be there as a latent tendency, but in order to manifest, can it still...
Only when it arises.
If the person... such a person with such a belief does something wrong, like stealing or killing, would that necessarily condition?
No, it's because beliefs are held at all different levels anyway. So even if a person professes to that belief, it doesn't mean that there's not some underlying, but at deeper levels, different belief. Who knows what one believes, really?
Are you saying that regret is conditioned by a belief?
There are conditions for regret.
No. At the moment, there is the wrong view that thinks there is no result of good and bad deeds. There could not be that kind of restlessness at that moment. Or regret, I mean.
Right.
I don't think. But then the next moment...
Right.
Yeah.
If you do a wrong deed, it has to condition regret at one time or the other, if you think about it, without being covering up with some... or reasoning and rationalizing.
For anyone who still has dosa.
Right.
But when you gave the example of just slight uneasiness about the hair or the nails or whatever, and that's usually about, say, now, about one's hair or nails. Now that's not...
Sotapanna doesn't have conditions to be reborn in woeful plane anymore.
Could it be, Ajahn, that the Sotapanna understands no self, so they don't do any gross things like killing, stealing, because they realize there's no self that can be harmed or no self to be protected. So that in certain things like, say, killing a tiger, they look at it as being an act that's... there is no tiger, there is no self that does it, so there's no regret over it. But on the little tiny things that are just programmed into... the very slight little regrets, which may not be associated with the self in a sense, with the idea of self, it's just conditioned through other situation, other conditions cause it to be that way, regret. Could that possibly be?
There are conditions for being regret.
Would there be regret, Ajahn, necessarily for, say, killing a tiger, say? Could there be regret in that sense?
For a certain
that's the question that Sarah brought up. But the Sotapanna would realize by now that there is no self that killed. There is no animal that was killed, in a sense. It's killed. It's done.
But it's
fallen away. Mm-hmm. But on something that's very small, like my hair is a little bit out of place.
It's now.
But killing an animal is, a Sotapanna no longer could indulge in that sort of thing.
Yeah, but Sarah's example is about yesterday.
Or mosquito. Not only tiger, but any kind of mosquito.
It's the same. It's the same, actually. So, what about something done yesterday? Also?
Before becoming a Sotapanna?
After. After. After.
After becoming a Sotapanna, and what?
And small things like...
Saying something bad to your wife.
Oh, saying something bad to somebody. Harsh speech.
It can be, as long as there is conditions for dosa.
So it can...
Could be regret.
No killing.
He's saying that in the case of killing the tiger in the past, is with a picture of a self doing something to somebody.
They can be thinking, and it's only a reality which thinks.
Because the Sotapanna still has attachment, but not to the degree, or attachment or aversion, but not to the degree of killing or to doing things that when they understand no self, right? So they don't lie because they know there's no one who's being protected. They don't kill because they know there's no one to be killed or no one who can kill. But they still have attachment, so they would also have some degree of regret. And then the anagami has less attachment, so they'd have less regret. Wouldn't it be related to the degree of attachment?
No regret because of no dosa.
On the thinking there's no result of deeds, one knows that this kind of idea or wrong view is the highest fault. Akusala kammapata with ditti is the worst kind of akusala kammapata. And when we talk about karma forming up over many processes, and the implications for rebirth, we know it's not just one deed or one act of chetana, but many, many processes or many, many moments of chetana which lead to the kammapata, which brings result. Could you say a little bit more about the forming up of karma?
Not one moment.
Yeah. Just accumulating so many moments of, for example, the chetana, when there is that wrong view, is the worst kind of kammapata. But we just say that
you don't have to count how many.
No, just accumulated from many such kinds of thinking in that particular way.
So because there cannot be just one moment of ill chetana.
No, but only one moment of kammapata.
One kamma, no matter how many moments. That's why some have short life and some have long life, like karma.
And sometimes you refer to, for example, the idea that there's no result of karma, and you quote that no cause, kiriya, no result, nati, no deeds, ahetuka. I don't quite understand this.
No result as vipaka,
no
but
result.
By other pajya like pakatupanisya pajya. Or anantaru patnisya patya, because after it has fallen away, it conditions the next moment.
And no deeds are hetuka.
Deed as kamma, which will produce vipaka.
Kiriya.
Okay.
It can be action also, kiriya, the meaning.
Because when I asked you about for a text which where it showed that having the idea that karma doesn't bring result is the worst kind of kammapata, you just quoted off, oh, no cause, kiriya, or akiriya, no result, nati, no deed.
You mean the three kinds of wrong view?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the wrong view. Then
three kinds of wrong view.
Yeah.
Okay. No cause, no result, no.
The belief that there is no cause, no result.
No result, or no deed.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the Pali is no cause is
Natika titil.
Natika, okay. And no result is
Ahetuka.
Ahetuka. And no deeds is
Akiriya.
Akiriya. Okay.
So Akiriya can have meaning.
Right. Different meanings.
Yeah.
Right.
What is the meaning of no deeds?
Just happen.
No karma.
No cause means no conditions at all. And no deeds means no karma.
Mm-hmm.
And no result means...
Actually, they're the same.
They're the same, yeah. Right. No results from deeds.
Or about feeling. Because I'm listening to Satipatthana and you speak about the feelings, the three feelings, and that we should not neglect indifferent feeling. But this is the hardest one to know, so we cannot force it.
The more we try, the more we want.
Yeah, loba.
Until awareness arises.
And can be aware of that feeling.
Yeah.
But usually you will be aware of the seeing, but not of the accompanying feeling. It's very complicated, difficult.
So how can there be detachment from feeling?
By being aware of
by
it.
By knowing.
Yeah. But indifferent feeling.
Because you see that we talk about jetasikas like feeling and passa and manasikara and so forth. But is there any understanding of a characteristic when it arises or appears?
Not yet.
Not yet.
It is beginning.
So it's just talking about the story of realities.
But you say, don't neglect feeling.
Otherwise there is no development of panya.
Yeah. You remind us.
Like this moment, right?
Well, is indifferent feeling harder to know?
Usually, we can understand moment of feeling pleasant or unpleasant.
Mm. So could we say that before there can be understanding of indifferent feeling, there has to be understanding?
It depends. It depends. We cannot say anything about this or that first.
Why are feelings always stressed as the examples? I mean, we know that they're so important and we're so attached to them, but for example, if one's reading about the Anusya or reading the Visuddhimagga sections on many different aspects, there's always feelings that are stressed. One knows that what we read about feelings also refers to the other chetasikas, the other namakandas, but why is feeling always given as the
because
example?
It's so important that one always cling.
It's so strong.
Because the feeling or the clinging?
Yeah, we want a pleasant object and people say, is it not the feeling that we want, especially, that we cling to pleasant objects? Is that true?
It's hard. What clings to pleasant object if it's not the pleasant feeling?
Yeah. It's the pleasant feeling with the clinging, together with the clinging.
If it's not pleasant, is it clean?
No. Or with indifferent feeling too, when you don't notice it.
So there is clinging to only feeling too.
Not only feeling.
Yes.
Yeah.
By feeling.
Yeah.
So why isn't clinging stressed?
Because it's there. Who doesn't like it?
There was a question by someone. Do you think that clinging is you, whether you think is clinging me?
All realities are taken for self when there is no understanding.
Yeah, that is the answer, really.
I have a question about feeling, which came up in Visuddhimagga. It's classified as subtle and gross in many regards, and one of them was it's classified as subtle and gross as to vatu, as to base, and there was an example given of being like feelings rising when someone eats something coarse or something refined, like rough millet, or it's gross, and eating curry is subtle. So does it mean that when feelings are classified as subtle and gross as to the vatu, does it refer to the strength of the eye base or something, whether the feelings are strong or less or something like
what
that?
What about the feeling when you have soup and the feeling when you have curry?
Right.
Fine, more refined.
Yes, but why does it say it's classified as to the vatu?
To know that all of them are just realities, different by conditions.
But I think that the devas eat very subtle food.
Mm-hmm.
So that
subtle
is
feeling again.
Yeah, it has influence.
So again, the importance of the feelings. But I just don't quite see why it said classified as subtle and gross as to the vatu.